This week on Inside Motorsport, we speak with Adrian Mussolino on his work preserving the history of the Australian Formula One Grand Prix in Adelaide. I hope you'll stay with us. I'm joined by Adrian Mussolino, who is not only the editor of Supercar Extra magazine, but you've also been working on a very interesting project for as far as motorsport is concerned, and really you're the curator of the history of the Australian Formula One Grand Prix years in Adelaide. And it's great to catch up with you and have a chat over tea and coffee.
Yeah, in Adelaide as well. Yeah. During a weekend when there's all the motorsport celebrations around the Adelaide Grand Prix and the history there, and it's a proud position to be in. It's something that I felt needed to be a history that needed to be told and had been forgotten to an extent, so that was one of the big motivators.
The first question is, where did your love of motorsport arise from?
Well, I grew up in Adelaide, so I was born in 83 and 85 was the first Grand Prix, so you know, going to school around that time, you'd learn about the Grand Prix and this, you know, circus that came to town every November, and then would go to some of the early races, and it just grew from there, really. And I think there's a lot of people of my generation in Adelaide who fell in love with the sport from that event.
You've managed then to turn that interest as a child into a career path, and I don't know that when you set off on a career path that you were looking to become part of the motorsport media fabric.
No, it was almost by accident. I was at university doing other things, and I did a writing course as part of it, and as part of that I wrote an article about motorsport and I sent it to a few magazines, and one got published, and it went from there, and then it snowballed, and that became my career, and I have uni degrees which I have no use for, so it's gone from there. I didn't expect it to last this long, but here we are. I think it's coming up on 15 years now. So
you've been working primarily with what was V8X magazine, but now is the Supercar Extra magazine. You're also editing the Supercar programs.
Yes.
For almost every
the
round.
The majority, yeah. So I first of all was a contributor with V8X, and then became editor in 2012, and then which became Supercar Extra magazine. And from 2018, we got the program deal with Supercar, so I edit and put together the programs as well. And that's my day job essentially. That's sort of ongoing and keeps me busy.
Now, about 2 years ago, you made the decision to, I guess, write, but it's become a bit more than write, the definitive history of the Adelaide Grand Prix years.
Yeah, so it started from, obviously, you know, the supercar season starts every year at the Adelaide 500, and, you know, it's always a event that brings up the memories of the Grand Prix and what it was and the legacy that it left. And I felt like the sport as a whole in this country didn't really give it the credit that it deserved for what it led to, not just, you know, within supercars, but, you know, Australian MotoGP, the IndyCar race on the Gold Coast and the like. And it, you know, growing up and living in Adelaide, you noticed that the city didn't really do a good enough job of remembering the event. It was almost like it's something we'd lost, so we just forgot about it. So I thought there should be a way to commemorate it in a sense, or pay tribute to its legacy, or sort of talk it up. And so then I sort of thought, you know, what if I sort of put together a book? And there had been a book done at the time when the Grand Prix was lost, but it was an advertiser, the newspaper here had done it, and it was limited run, and it's not available anymore. So I thought it'd be nice if there was something available. And it went from there, yeah. And it's been a long process, and it's become more than just the book, as you said. It's a key thing for me was just the social media and the web presence, so there's almost a daily reminder of what the event was and what it meant.
If we start with that, and you set up a web page, which is the Adelaide Grand Prix web page on Facebook.
Yes, first was the social media, and then I built that up for a year, and then the website came after. But it was, yeah, it was a targeted process to build up the market first and then do the book. I could see from other people that they'd put books out there and people wouldn't realize that they were out there and just they'd get forgotten. So my thought was build up the audience first, build up the community as a way to commemorate the event and, you know, build up a market and then do the book.
And you mentioned about every day you're finding a photo or a story that you can link back to the Adelaide years.
Yes, it's some days are harder than others, but there's, you know, enough of a legacy that you can trace back to the event, and there's always, you know, records or anniversaries or, you know, key driver birthdays or things like that. So,
and I guess now in some cases, sons
exactly,
of people who
exactly,
race here.
The Schumachers and the Lacys and the like. So it's been great in that sense because it's developed more around, you know, some days it's anniversaries, some days it's just random memories of things. And, you know, there's an image archive which I've been able to get my hands on, which has helped in that regard. But as I said, it's all about building that community, and it's been great to see that people will sort of chip in with their own memories, or, you know, they remember that year or that car or that driver, and that's fantastic. That's what I was hoping for, that would bring up those memories.
One thing that you had set about to do is you'd set about to talk to as many people who were part of the establishment and then the running of the event over the 11 years.
Yes.
And for some of them, it could have been, what, 3 years even previous to that when the whole thing started. So how many people have you spoken to that in that sort of the inner sanctum of the Grand Prix office?
In total, I think I'm around 50, and that includes drivers, team personnel, mechanics. It's been great, and it's evolved over that time. So when I first started the book project, I sort of went for the key figures, the Mal Hemmerlings and the Bernie Ecclestons and the like. But then as it sort of evolved, it became, you know, oh, you should speak to this person or that person. And it's been everyone from Bill O'Gorman, who wrote the original letter to the Premier of the time, John Bannon, to say, you know, Adelaide should think about having a Grand Prix, to, you know, there was a Ferrari mechanic who fell in love with Adelaide and has stayed here and now lives here, and from him. So it's various people, David Brabham, Alan Jones, they're the two Australians who raced at the Adelaide Grand Prix, and yeah, it's evolved from it. It's been great, and that's going to form the basis. In addition to the image archive, that's the real basis of these stories of the people, the unsung heroes as well, who, you know, were involved in the circuit design or the council. It was an incredible process, and I don't think people realise what a remarkable achievement it was for Adelaide at the time. Considering as well, people often forget it was meant to be for 86, and Bernie Ecclestone said, no, if you want it, you're going to have it from 85. So everything had to be a year forward. So it's a pretty incredible achievement.
We'll have more from Adrian after this break on Inside Motorsport. Hello, I'm Craig Revell. Each week, join myself and Dennis Newland as we talk about Speedway on Inside Speedway. Dennis, it's great to have an opportunity to put out a podcast on a sport that I certainly grew up with, and I think you did as well.
This is the electronic age that we live in now, Craig. I'm really looking forward to these shows because we can bring the listeners the latest news, interviews with the stars, the current era, the past history.
I hope people enjoy hearing what they have to say as much as we're looking forward to talking to them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, we've already spoken of a few likely guests in the very first few shows, and we've got some good names that the listeners can really enjoy their comments and their views on the sport. And I think what it also does too, it gives an opportunity to explore certain matters in the sport as well. It can also be an editorial as well as being a commentary and a feature story on a particular competitor. So it's got a lot going for us, mate.
And for the fans of yourself, they don't have to wait till Sunday to read in the paper. They can hear it on a Friday each and every week.
Yep, and as I say, that is the electronic age that we live in. It's absolutely fabulous. There's going to be plenty of great listening, I know that much.
So join us this Friday for our first edition of Inside Speedway. Welcome back to Inside Motorsport. We continue our chat now with Adrian Mussolino.
I mentioned it, that you're really a curator now of the Adelaide Grand Prix legacy. And I know, because I've seen some of these things having visited you before, that what you're uncovering and what you're finding when people start thinking back to it is some amazing pieces of memorabilia that potentially we're going to be in a box in a garage that eventually got thrown out.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much of that, and it's been incredible. And I guess the one story I can tell, which is going to define the book and has defined my whole process, was throughout the interviews, I interviewed someone who was one of the last staff members of the Grand Prix office in Adelaide. And he told me that when they closed the door on the final day, a lot of things went off for auction in early 96, and the image slides that they had collected over the years went to the State Library. And, you know, when I heard this, I thought, I need to get hold of this archive, because that's going to be, you know, such an incredible asset for my book. And the whole process was basically, where were these image slides and who owned the copyright? The State Library of South Australia hold possession of them, but they put them in storage and left them there from 96, and they believe they didn't have the copyright clearance. So
you've actually learnt what orphan materials mean.
Exactly.
And the definition of what an orphan material is.
When I approached the State Library and they'd said, well, actually the Bernie Eccleston owns the copyright, and this was around the time that Bernie Eccleston sold Formula One to Liberty Media, so I told them that, and then they said, well, if you can get the clearance from them, then you can have access to them. So I went to the Australian Grand Prix Corporation Melbourne and with Liberty Media, and we got that clearance, thankfully. Obviously, it sort of doesn't affect them. As long as we're not portraying the sport in a negative light, they don't really care what we do.
But my understanding was they said, well, we don't own them either.
Yeah, exactly.
Which then made them officially orphaned.
Exactly. And so the State Library sort of realised that, well, we could actually look at them. So it's been a long process. There's 169 boxes of slides with 20 pages of 20 slides on each page. So I think it's 60,000 plus images, which I've been working through steadily. And that's held up the book, because it's such a long process. But the archive, the material in there is stuff that I'd never seen, and a lot of it I don't think has been seen by the public, certainly not since 96. So it's a long process to look through them. I'm working with the library to digitise them, and they'll be in the book. It's been a timely and costly process, but I think the end result's going to be incredible. And it's been great to share some of those images, almost like a teaser on the social media page. And without that archive, I don't think I could have done the book. Mm.
There's also been some other interesting things that have come across, where there was almost like a jigsaw puzzle on a wall in the office that was going to get thrown out, but ended up in someone else's garage.
Absolutely. Part of this process as well, I came across someone who worked in the office who had poster-sized aerial images of the race from 87 from memory, and just, you know, 15 of these large-scale images which show detail which I'd never seen. And I know within the State Library archive there's the trophies and the tyres just sitting there. So when the book eventually comes out, hopefully we can do something around that to get them out and as part of a launch or something. Because, yeah, there's all this material, and it's actually been great to see people come onto the Facebook page and the social media to, you know, oh, I've got this in my garage, or, you know, I own the left rear tyre from Nelson Piquet's Lotus from 1989 or something. And it's been great. It's sort of brought up a lot of things, which, and I've definitely learnt a lot through this process. There's some things I had no idea about that,
What's been the most startling thing, revelation that you've uncovered without spoiling the book, of course.
No, the biggest has been how the bid progressed and just the track design itself. And I'd never seen the original track layouts, and I don't think many people have. And they're incredibly different from what ended up. And I think people forget that what we now know as the Grand Prix and the Adelaide 500 track, based in Victoria Park, it wasn't always a certainty that they could use Victoria Park, so they had to go around the city, and that would have been a very different street circuit, more like what we see in America. What makes Adelaide unique is that combination of parkland and city.
And being on the edge of the city meant that it didn't actually stop the city from operating.
Exactly.
I'm sure a lot of Adelaideans have memories of, well, still have memories of when the Adelaide 500 runs, of annoyance of having to divert their morning commute.
Yep.
But it didn't actually bring the city to a halt.
No, and that's the beauty, and that's actually thanks to Colonel Light's vision for, he was the surveyor and town planner of Adelaide back in the day, and it was his vision to surround the city by parklands that made that possible. So I made sure there's a chapter in the book about Adelaide history that focuses on Colonel Light and the foundation of the city, because without that, it would have been just a run-of-the-mill street circuit, and as we've seen in America, they don't often work as well. And I think that's the secret to Adelaide's success, is, as you said, it's on the fringe of the city, but it's in the city, and it's within its own sort of section of the parklands.
You mentioned one of the mechanics loved Adelaide so much he moved here, but I know that you've spoken to people from all over the world,
yes,
and you've gathered some of their memories about Adelaide, and what's been their thoughts, having 20 years now or more to reflect on having come to Adelaide and experienced this Grand Prix?
Everyone's so fond of it. There's not really been a bad word, and there's often been just almost like the rose-tinted glasses come out, and they just loved it. They loved the event, they loved the city, they loved how it made them feel. It was especially nice to hear from David Brabham and Alan Jones, having, you know, raced in Formula One and travelled the world, that how proud they were as Australians that this event, you know, put on such a great show and was so accommodating. And that's definitely been the overwhelming feeling, and it's nice to hear, because, you know, before the Grand Prix, people hadn't really heard of Adelaide. It was a very different city to what it became after. And again, that's part of the reason I wanted to do the book, because it almost helped spark this sort of social and cultural revolution in the city that you see today with major events. So it's been great to hear from a few people, especially, as I said, from people overseas who never heard of the city. That's been the funny thing. I think one of my favourite quotes is Bernie Eccleston said, if he wanted to do a Grand Prix at a road course or permanent facility in Australia, he'd do it at Brands Hatch and put kangaroos in the middle and call it the Australian Grand Prix. He said, you know, it needs to be something special within a city, and that's what Adelaide did.
Did anyone talk about what they thought the legacy is to Formula One of what Adelaide did? Because Adelaide won best Grand Prix,
yes,
so many times. I think it could have been even 8 out of 11 Grand Prix. They were the best. They were considered the best. So what has Adelaide, or what did Adelaide do that now is commonplace in Formula One?
The two main factors were, or two key ones that keep coming up, was one of the concerts after the race, which is now just standard for most marquee events, including supercar events, you know. That's just standard, and that's something that developed over time in Adelaide. It was 1987 when they had Crowded House after the concert. That was the real first real post-race concert event.
Now, this was to manage crowd control too.
Yes.
It was an Edward de Bono idea of, we can't have, 90,000 or 100,000
yep.
people all flood into the city at the same time.
Yep.
So if we put a concert on, some people will stay for the concert, some people will leave,
yep.
and we'll have a trickle effect back into the city, which would be exactly. more manageable for cafes and parking and traffic.
Yeah, and what they saw in the first couple of events was people would come into the city to hang around. So, you know, Rundle Street became the hub of activity, and it was closed off and there were parties. So the organisers thought, well, let's take advantage of this and do our own thing, which is why the concerts developed. So something that people could hang around the facility, and it grew from there to the point that by the end it was, you know, big international acts like Bon Jovi and Cher and the likes. And so that was one of the major ones that's just now standard practice. The other was the the Paddock Club above the pits. And the only reason that happened in Adelaide was they sold out the corporate facilities in the main grandstand, so that we need to put the corporates and VIPs somewhere, and the Premier as well. So they thought, well, why don't we do another floor above the pits and have that? And that's how that developed. And now again, that's just the standard where the sort of, you know, the Paddock Clubs of the world are held. So, and you know, things like the minute by minute schedule and the support categories, and it all evolved in Adelaide. And again, it's now, we just take that for granted, that it's just, that's the norm.
A final break, and then we'll conclude our chat with Adrian Mussolino on the Formula One years of Adelaide's Grand Prix.
Each week, find out what the men behind the V8 News know and what the drivers and teams are going to do next. It's interviews and opinions on Inside Supercars.
Wall-to-wall action on both the 10 platform and also, and when I say 10, it's main channel 10, and also on the Fox Sports, you know, sort of network as well. So, you know, a real quantum shift. To
tune in for more at sportradio.com.au or lock in the podcast on your iTunes or mobile device. Search Inside Supercars.
Welcome back to Inside Motorsport. As we conclude our chat with Adrian Mussolino, it's interesting to find out just the people who have passed and how he's been able to get their stories of the Grand Prix.
Now, Premier John Bannon passed away before you started on the book. Have you been able to capture any of his involvement, either directly through things he might have said publicly and on the public record, or through secondhand conversations with, I was in this meeting when he did this? Or
thankfully, the John Bannon archive exists at Flinders University in South Australia, so a lot of his sort of materials from when he was Premier is there, which has helped a lot. But also some of his key political allies, you know, Mal Hemmeling especially, who is still quite prominent within Adelaide, within councils, and he was a great interview because he was there from the beginning with John, and he was a key ally. So, you know, that was a big disappointment, you know, to not be able to meet with the Premier at the time, and that would have been a great asset. But unfortunately, we're at the point now where some of that generation are passing on, and it's I've not been able to get to a few people who have passed away, sadly, but there's been enough around to sort of fill the gaps.
Australia's so far away, and for Formula One, it's a series that does do a lot of travelling, but I believe some of the things that happened here for transporting of Formula One also is now part of world motorsport transportation.
Yep, Gibson Freight, you know, was a key figure in that, and I was fortunate enough to speak to them as well. And yeah, again, it was what you've got to remember with Formula One at the time was it was predominantly Europe, a couple of North American races, and then, you know, this swing at the end of the year to Australia was completely new. And the funny thing was, for the first year in 85, they didn't want to come because it was off the back of a South African Grand Prix that was shrouded in controversy around apartheid, and teams were pulling out things, and the championship was over, and they came to the city they never heard of, thinking this is going to be a disaster. And they were all pleasantly surprised. And, you know, yeah, you're right, in terms of the freight, and then the Japanese Grand Prix came along, and that was paired with Australia. So again, it really kick-started that Formula One international expansion, where now you've got, what, five or six Grand Prix in Asia. It's just the norm. So it was pioneering at the time, and it did open the floodgates.
Knowing how long it takes to transcribe and to understand the intricacies of putting something like you're endeavouring to do together, do you know when the book will be finished? Have you got another year of work ahead of you?
Or? Unfortunately, it's out of my hands because, as discussing earlier about the slides, the process of digitising them is out of my hands. Because they're archival material, I can't do that myself. So it's the State Library's working with me, but they can only do so much, and I can't push them more. It's a process that's quite timely, but it's going to be beneficial in the end. It's material that without it I couldn't have done the book. So I was hoping for 2020, because that would have been the 35th and 25th anniversaries of the first and last Grand Prix, and that's still the target. It just depends on the slide process and That's the big hold up at the stage, but as I said, it's pretty essential.
And up until that point, we've talked about the social media, but one thing that you've been able to do as well is you've started to put out a calendar, which is available for people to enjoy some of the images and to have a memory of the event.
Yeah, so just something small I wanted to do for people, you know, to sort of buy the time before the book comes out and just, you know, put something out there. There's going to be more like that coming along. I'm looking at sort of maybe setting up like a marketplace where people can sort of swap or exchange or purchase some Grand Prix material. The difficulty I've encountered is there is still some legal uncertainties around the Grand Prix and whether it belongs to the Australian Grand Prix Corporation or whether the Adelaide stuff is orphaned, as you said. So it's a bit of a process, but the whole point is that I wanted to create the community and marketplace first, long before the book came out, so then when that did come out, there's a ready-made audience. But also just so people can start sort of sharing and remembering and commemorating, because that's just not happened. So it appears probably like it's taking longer than it should, but the whole point is that I don't want to just rush this out and put it out there. It's part of it's not just the book, it's part of a bigger thing that'll be ongoing. So that there is a presence online.
It's been a pleasure to catch up with you, Adrian, and we look forward to seeing how it all rolls on in 2020 and beyond.
Thank you. It's been great.
Well, it's fascinating work, and we're all looking forward to Adrian's book hitting the shelves and then seeing what comes from these amazing historical items that he's been able to put together. That's all we have time for this week on Inside Motorsport. Until next time round, keep smiling and bye for now.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media for the Community Radio Network.